Hello, lovelies. Welcome to the Fat Joy podcast, where we talk each week about how to flourish in an anti-fat world. I'm Sophia Apostle, a fat professional coach who loves talking to other fat people about what it's like to live within oppressive systems that marginalize our bodies and how we still dare to have the audacity and courage to reach towards our collective liberation and embrace our joy. Please know this is an adult content podcast, so there will be swears, we will be talking about harms we've experienced, and we will be rebelling against weight stigma, diet culture, fat phobia, ableism, racism, etc. You can get more Fat Joy goodness, including how you can support the podcast through my newsletter at fatjoy.substack.com. And for episode transcripts, book reviews, and show notes, head to the Fat Joy website at fatjoy.life. I am so glad you're here. Enjoy this episode. Hello, lovelies. Welcome back to the Fat Joy podcast. I'm your host, Sophia Apostle. And may I just say that I am joined by three incredible, incredible women today. I am joined by three plus size pageant queens. Hello, lovelies.
Hello.
It's so good to be here with you. I feel a little starstruck. I feel like I maybe didn't dress quite the part, but I did wear my fancy earrings. So that was intentional.
You are in the plus size pageant world. Absolutely.
Okay. So this is why I'm so excited to talk to you all, because I was saying right before we started recording that I have so many assumptions about what pageants are, what they mean, what they're all about. And I don't know. I was like, I think we need to go a little deeper. And then I found out that there are plus size pageants, which meant, of course, like, I had to know everything immediately. So joining us today, we have Shanice Stevenson, Ellen Miller, and Rebecca Breedlove-Berry. So welcome, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Yes. So I'm going to invite you each to just share a little bit about yourself to get us started. And so, Ellen, let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about who you are.
Thank you. So my name's Ellen. I'm a 32-year-old emergency nurse practitioner. If you haven't guessed from the accent, I am not American, but I'm originally from Northern Ireland, but I currently live in London and I work in a super busy emergency department. And I had the absolute amazing opportunity to compete not only once, but twice at internationals for Miss Voluptuous. First as Miss Voluptuous Ireland and then in the Ms. category as Miss Voluptuous Emerald Isle. And that's where I actually got to meet these two gorgeous girls as well. So that was like just great. And that was in Colorado this year. Outside of that, I'm actually an ambassador for a sexual violence charity called Say It Loud. So I'm trying to kind of hop on the bandwagon of, social media, because that's like how you get your voice out there these days. So I'm trying to get to grips with that. And I have a little cat called Lumi, who I definitely... makes me a crazy cat lady.
I love it. A shout out to Lumi. Thanks, Ellen. Rebecca, how about you?
I'm Rebecca Breedlove-Berry. I'll be 43 this November. 43, I'm proud. I am the former Miss Voluptuous Virginia, and I'm the current Curvy Miss Supreme International. It's a title I just won about a month ago. Very exciting. For my career, I am a volunteer coordinator with the Virginia Department of Health, the Medical Reserve Corps, for our local corps here on the peninsula here in Virginia. My platform is empowerment through volunteerism, and my main goal is to encourage people to think outside of the box, to think about their skill sets and the things they like to do, and how they can plug in with different organizations. Even something as simple in our home, we foster pets because we can volunteer our home and our hearts. In the past, I have done social media for different organizations because that's something I enjoy doing and I can do it quickly and easily by using my skill set. So that's my main purpose with my platform.
So cool. Thanks, Rebecca. And Shanice.
Hi, ladies. My name is Shawnee Stevenson, and I am your current Miss Voluptuous International.
I am 31 years old. I'll be 32 in November. And I'm originally from California, Southern California, but I have lived in Kentucky now for almost 10 years. So this is my second home. I was originally Miss Voluptuous Indiana, and then I competed at internationals in Colorado this past April, and I won the international title. This is actually my very first pageant that I ever competed in. And I had the pleasure of winning it. My platform is mental health awareness with a focus on our adolescents and young adulthood. I know how much not being in touch with my mental health affected my adult years and all of that trauma that kind of resurfaced that I never processed. So my goal is to educate. My goal is to inform. My goal is to make sure that mental health is a common topic that we can all discuss, especially in those communities, in like African-American communities, where it's not a common practice or a common topic that is acknowledged. So I have a foundation called Empowering You, and I'm still dibbling and dabbling a little bit of everywhere with that foundation, but my main goal is to just show it for my community. So I'm really working on having that aspect of my platform thrive right now.
Wow. I don't know. I'm feeling very emotional. I'm so in awe of all of you. I really am. I'm feeling like, gosh, like the platforms that you are holding and the vision and drive that you have with each of them and what the impact is that you can have. Like, that's really impressive. I think that's why I'm feeling like I literally have tears in my eyes. I'm just like, wow. Cause if you listen to this podcast at all, everyone listening will know most of the time I feel pretty helpless and hopeless about this world, but there's the three of you who are just like, I won this thing and I'm going to use that to like ripple effect out good change in the world. That's amazing.
Thank you. Thank you. I think that's what the main focus and the difference in between some pageants that might not be plus size inclusive is that I found in a lot of plus size pageants, it's not really about the way that you look or that you present yourself. It's truly about the person that you are and the impact that you're making in the world. So that's why it's a whole different ballgame over here. These ladies know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I mean, I think there are so many assumptions that we make about what pageants are. And even you just saying that, Shanice, as a real difference is very exciting. I'm really curious about what drew you all to doing pageants. So, Rebecca, can we start with you this time? Like, how did you get involved? Especially there's, and I'm curious for each of you too, to speak to not only what drew you to get involved, but also like, it's like Miss Voluptuous. Like you are claiming your bodies. It's kind of a part of being part of it, right? Like, and I just think that's incredible and public. And I imagine this is what I'm curious to hear. Did you have to do some inner work in order to be able to show up and like walk on that stage as Miss Voluptuous? So Rebecca, tell us a little bit about that journey for you.
Well, my dream really started when I was a teenager in the 90s in California. I always wanted to do pageantry, but I'm sure you remember in the 90s, it was heroin chic and you had to be 6 feet tall and weigh 95 pounds. Well, I've never been either of those things. And, so it was just something I always put on the back burner. And I met several people throughout my life who've done pageantry. And, I had my esthetician, she encouraged me to revisit. I did a little research and I realized, oh my goodness, pageantry has changed and I can be part of the change. I can be part of that beauty standard shift. And, you know, total fangirl here, but Aubrey Gordon.
I mean, Aubrey Gordon.
Aubrey Gordon. Listening to her, actually, it altered my perspective about myself. And you know what? I think I'm beautiful. So, okay. I don't need to meet anybody's health standards. I make my own beauty standards and I'm going to go do this and I'm going to go do it well. So that was the big push for me, is that big mental change, that mental shift of, oh my goodness, I am gorgeous. I do have a place on that stage, and that title is mine.
Yes, yes. I think Aubrey would be so happy to hear you credit her as part of it. I was so lucky to get to interview her on the podcast, and it was like such a fangirl moment as well.
Just a little jealous.
I know. I was like, I couldn't even talk. I was like, oh my God.
I watched the video and I'm like, I don't know how you did it.
I don't either, honestly. Thanks, Rebecca. Shanice, how about you? What brought you to pageants, and how did it, what kind of self-work? I mean, your focus is mental health. I imagine there may have been some pieces around body stuff that you had to explore as well.
Oh, goodness. There was so much. So prior to entering into the MVP system, I really hadn't been a part of the pageant world at all. And what led me to applying for MVP was I was doing a lot of self-work prior to that. And I wanted to show up for myself the way that I show up for everyone else, because I was not doing that. And I found myself in a very dark space. And that's what led me into mental health care. And I'm like, you know what? I'm doing something for me. I'm going to do something that I enjoy. And then when I researched MVP, initially I thought it was clickbait because I saw a posting on Facebook and I'm like, is this for real? Like, are people really doing this? Because it just sounded too good to be true to me. But it was not clickbait. It was actually really amazing. And just the values that MVP carries and how they empower women to be 100% who they are in their bodies. You do not have to change anything about yourself. You can show up and change the world in your own capacity, the way that you choose to. That meant so much to me, because that was something that I had to work very hard to accept in myself. And to be comfortable to do in myself, and so that I could be great for me and great for the people around me. So I applied, and during that whole journey leading up to internationals, granted, I might have practiced my walk some and I might have done, you know, all of the glitzy stuff a little bit, but it was mostly a very mental journey for me. I focused 100% on my own worth. I focused on just empowering myself and feeling like I'm capable in this body right here, right now. And I feel like that is what ultimately led me to the title, because I wasn't worried about other girls, because you're going up some incredible, as you can see, Ellen and Rebecca, they're incredible. You're going up against some incredible women, but you really have to focus on yourself and feel empowered in your body the way that you are. And it was just an absolutely amazing journey.
Wow. It's so interesting. As you were talking, Shanice, I was just so struck by how opposite that is to what diet culture would tell us, especially in a public facing like contest, you know, that just show up exactly who you are. Don't change anything. I actually find my brain having a hard time wrapping itself around that, you know, the freedom of that.
Polar opposite.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, amazing. Thank you. And Ellen, what about you? What drew you to pageants, and what was that process like for you?
So pageants probably aren't as big as they are in America. And I say the word big, and no pun intended. But like, you know, I grew up in Ireland, and we have like, obviously you've got the Miss Universe and all that. Everyone knows, like, you know, the big competitions, but you never really see it kind of, well, I never really saw it reflected kind of in my community. Never kind of didn't know any pageant girls kind of growing up. But there in Ireland, there's this competition called the Rose of Tralee. And they even have like the New York Rose, they have a California Rose, and it's very much an Irish heritage kind of like pageant as such, where each year a girl from kind of each county in Ireland and abroad competes to be the Rose of Tralee, and then it's kind of like a big thing, and it's like broadcast on the TV channels and all that. So I remember that, but there wasn't kind of like, you know, I presume how it is in the States with you guys, where you, there probably was like the homecoming queens and they were probably pageant girls and kind of growing up and having that around you. So it was only like in later life that I kind of was exposed to it. So I entered the Rose of Tralee and I did the London finals. And that kind of like, you had like, you know, an element of like on stage questions like you would with a pageant. And I didn't win, but I had so many people come up to me. And in that moment, I kind of then looked around me, because obviously there's, you go into something with, because you would like to win. Anyone that says that they're doing it just for fun, I think is kind of maybe not telling the 100% truth, because, you know, of course you want to win, but obviously it's not, that's not just the main thing. So obviously I had a great experience and I didn't win, but then I looked around and then obviously it came from inside. I was like, none of these girls look like me and I'm the only plus size girl here. Is that why I didn't succeed? Is that why I maybe wasn't seen as a more worthwhile candidate? And looking back, that was probably just my interpretation of it. But in that moment, I kind of was like, well, surely there must be something that represents who I am, because I'm not an anomaly. Like, there's lots of women that look like me. So I literally Googled like plus size pageants UK and like quite a few came up, and Miss Voluptuous was the one that really kind of drew me in with kind of like the ethos and kind of having looked at past winners and everything like that. And then I just kind of got sucked into this pageant world of being like, oh my gosh, it does exist. And it's not always like the Sandra Bullock movie that we all know and love. Oh, I love that. I literally was thinking before joining, like, we need to remake Miss Congeniality to be like a plus size version.
And there's always a Congeniality title in most pageants as well, which we love.
Oh, mm-hmm. Is there? Oh, that's fun. Yeah. Nice. So tell us a little bit about Pageant World. This is a world I know nothing about. I grew up in Canada with a little stint in the States, and that I would say that's where I was mostly exposed to pageants. But in Canada, I think similar, Ellen, to where you live, it's not a big part of our culture. So I actually don't know a whole lot about pageants. So what is the pageant world like? And it sounds like there's differences between like Miss Voluptuous and others. So you all have been part of Miss Voluptuous, so we can focus on that one. But like, what does that mean, pageant world, when it comes to Miss Voluptuous? Shanice, you want to start us off with this one? Give us a little bit of info, and then Ellen and Rebecca can jump in too.
Well, I can't speak to other pageants because, one, I haven't been part of them. So I really don't know. But as far as Miss Voluptuous, it's very action-based. So whatever your platform is, that is the main focus for you to take action within your community to support your platform. So mine is mental health awareness. One of the main things that I love to do is put on community events. I have one coming up called Earning Your Seat at the Table, where I'm focusing on mental health and men and all of that good stuff. So it is to focus on those areas where you want to make a change in the world, while also really embracing you, embracing your body, embracing how you look, being confident in how you look, being comfortable in looking the way that you do in front of other people, being that confident. It's just about really, truly building your self-confidence. There's a lot of self-care. So within the MVP system, prior to internationals, there's round tables where we'll get together and talk about different social events or different ways that we can handle self-care. There's just a variety of topics. And it's ultimately creating this network of sisterhood around you, so that you have all of these incredible women that are doing all of these amazing things in the world, and you connect with them, and then you're building up to this moment where you get to internationals, and you're all, of course, you're competing ultimately. There's interview you're competing in. You're competing in optionals. Maybe that might be runway. That might be an acting position. You're also competing in your interview and all of those areas. But then you're coming together to show each other, like, this is what it's like to have a sisterhood of women that look like us, that support each other, that you can depend on, because all of those relationships that I formed at internationals, I still talk to all of those women. I'm still very comfortable with all of them. Some of them are returning next year. So when I hand over my title, I'll get to see their beautiful faces. Like Ellen, Rebecca, they are absolutely amazing. And I know if I needed to pick up the phone and be like, hey guys, they would pick up. So it's just this incredible system, really.
Wow. Oh my gosh. That alone makes me want to do it. Like to have those, to be able to form those kinds of connections. That's amazing. And are you all told, like, do you have to know what your platform is going in? That's part of what you're showcasing. Is that how that works?
I would say that's probably like a real key part of the Miss Voluptuous kind of pageant is, it is mainly as platform based. And like Shanice was saying, like it is very much about, okay, yes, there is like a competition, but you're engaging with a sisterhood. And that's literally what it's called, a sisterhood. But yeah, so whenever you're there, it can't be a case of like, oh yeah, I kind of like this kind of like charity and I'd kind of like to do this. Like you have to know your facts. Like you have to be sure in yourself, in your platform. Like you have to have a vision because essentially, you know, you're then representing your platform. So yeah, and is it what we were saying before as well, like, you know, you got all these people around the world doing all these different things, you know, it becomes in a bit of a powerhouse system that this change is then kind of like being manufactured with not just like one person, like in one city, but like globally.
Yeah. Well, I can imagine that you probably get really invested in each other's platforms too, and you want to support them. And now you've got this whole network of people, this sisterhood that you can, you know, get support from, advice from, mentorship from, be a mentor. I'm really imagining a beautiful network of people.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Rebecca, what else would you say about pageant world? Like, what else do you think about when you think about that?
Pageant world is, it is what you make it. You know, I've done some other pageants as well. But if there isn't an emphasis on the platform, I'm not doing it. That's a big key for me. Also, as I shared, my body image is my own. I've had offers from straight size pageants, and I'm not interested in being the token checkmark inclusive. And I've always stuck with plus size or curvy as like my current title because I'm not changing my body.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. The tokenism piece.
Yes. Oh, yeah. There's definitely a big shift in pageantry in the broad spectrum. And a lot of the larger organizations are trying to checkmark that inclusive. And I'm just not interested in being part of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I would have questions about and beyond just like again, I think of systemic stuff, right? So I'd be like, okay, and how are you going to accommodate my body size in certain ways? Will there be chairs that fit me? Is it really inclusive? Will there be clothing that, you know, can, that works for my body? Like there's so many more things that are needed than just, oh, great, we got our token size 14, for example, and that's our plus size person. And now we're inclusive? No.
Yeah. Well, in pageantry, it would be your token size 10.
No, 10 is a plus size? Oh my gosh. Okay. Thank you for that correction. Oh my goodness. Wow. Okay. Yeah. Totally different vibe then for the Miss Curvy and the Miss Voluptuous, for sure.
And within our organizations, it's, I know for my organization that I'm part of now, it's a size 14 and up. And with Voluptuous, is it still a 10 or a 12?
It's a UK 10, but a US 12.
Yeah. Yay. Oh, interesting. Yeah. Wow.
And what I love about that is that's minimum.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there a max?
Nope.
No, that's great. Yeah. Is there a lot of size diversity? Do you have super fats? That's great.
Yes, because I probably would say that I was one of the larger contestants up there. There is a vast array of bodies, shapes, sizes, and they are all absolutely incredible and just as capable as anyone else.
Right. Oh, I love it.
Yeah, Sophia, if you have a chance to look at the pictures from our internationals in back in April, not a single one of us looked alike at all. Our body shapes, our faces, nothing was the same.
Yeah.
That's what is perfect.
I said no copy paste
at all.
Oh my gosh. I love that. And so what is the pageant like? So again, my reference is movies. So I'm imagining there's a talent, there's a swimwear. Like that's what's happening in my head right now. What are some of the components of the competition? Ellen, do you want to start us off this time?
So Shanice mentioned earlier on, but the biggest kind of scoring part of it is actually your interview. So normally it's like the day before the kind of like what people actually think of as the pageant, which is the on stage competition. So you have an interview with a panel. We had such an array of guests on there. So we had people with like influencer backgrounds. We also had, local kind of business people. We had guest judges from other systems as well. So most people, and so you don't know going in who you kind of really have until the kind of like day of. And you don't have like a preset questions either. So but most of it, yeah, you kind of have an idea that of course they're going to ask you about your platform, like what you kind of see yourself as going forward, like all these sorts of things. And it's kind of, it's not like a job interview. It is a job interview, but it's not like a job interview where you're like, okay, like I'm a nurse. So I know that they're going to ask me X, Y, Z. Like it could be anything. And some of them, like a lot of them are kind of like, almost like kind of like politically kind of like, going fired as well, like with the, the kind of state of the world, like, kind of like current news and stuff. But then you've also got what probably people really think of as like the pageant stuff, which is on stage. So you've got, we have national costume. Which is really fun. Then you have evening wear, which is like all the glitz and the glam. And oh my gosh, you have like your onstage introduction as well. And we do like an opening number, which is cute. And I think that's all of it. Sorry, I took
from. And then I think a portion of it too is your, prior to you even coming to internationals, it's about 10% of your score because it's an accumulative score over time. So how you conduct yourself on social media, how you interact with your director, how you interact with your other pageant queens, that is also calculated into your score because ultimately we want to put someone in the title that is a well-rounded person, that is a confident person, knows the direction that she's going, and isn't afraid to be out there and do all of the things necessary to shake up some stuff.
Yeah. Oh, I like that. Amazing. Rebecca, anything to add? Anything else?
A little bit of my different experience with other organizations. My last pageant, I actually did swimwear. And I love a swim dress. I love a retro look. So I wore Daisy swim dress with it. It had a little bit of a sheer midriff. And I always just wear things that I would wear. And I didn't place in swimwear, but I had a blast doing it. So, so I've got to experience that aspect of pageantry. But it was, of course, it was an optional. So I chose to participate.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, yeah.
I've noticed, too, that in some plus-size pageants that active or sportwear is becoming a thing. So it's like whatever outfit that you would kind of work out in, go on a walk or something like that, that's also become a thing kind of in place of swimwear, because although we're empowering all these women, some people might not be comfortable getting on that stage in a bathing suit. And that might be a complete game changer. So although we want to empower everyone to accept their bodies the way that we are, we also want to help meet people where they're at and help them feel comfortable showcasing themselves. Because when you get on that stage, it sounds easy, but it is easier said than done.
Hey there, Fat Joy listeners. Did you know there's a mental health practice in Canada that is specifically for fat folks? Tend and Cultivate Counseling was created by and for fat people. It's a place that offers non-stigmatizing fat-centric mental health care, whether you want to talk about your body or not. They specialize in body trust, self-compassion, body liberation, eating disorders, relationships, sex, pleasure, and trauma. So if you're looking for mental health care that understands the complexities of navigating life in a fat body, head to tendandcultivate.com/fatjoy. Or you can give episode 57 of the Fat Joy podcast a listen to hear my interview with their founder, Dawn Sarah. My partner and I actually worked with Dawn and got some really helpful relationship support when we needed it. And good news, they see clients outside of Canada too. Fat Mental Health Matters and Tend and Cultivate Counseling is here to support you. Get the website link in this episode's show notes to tendandcultivate.com/fatjoy and prioritize your mental health. I love that, Shanice, because that was one of the things that I'm dying to know is, like, for each of you, was there like a really hard moment or like, oh gosh, I can't believe I just did that, or like, just because it all looks and sounds like smooth and perfect. And I suspect that there are things that maybe happened or surprised you. So I'd love to hear some of those moments. Rebecca, you want to share one of yours?
Well, for me, it's the prep that goes into, boob tape.
Oh, does that even work?
Not really.
I was going to say, not really. I can't even imagine.
I have a very supportive family members who helped me.
Like, literally supportive. They're holding you and taping.
And then I had rubbed off my toenail like 2 weeks before. So my niece had to glue my toenails on.
Oh, no. So, Rebecca. Oh, no. Ouch.
So those are the things that I always think about that are just, it's so funny. But it was part of my experience.
Right? I love it. Boob tape and lost toenails. That's so good. Oh, no. Shanice, how about you?
So, you know, when you get, you're in the audience and it's just this amazing show and it looks so beautiful and so organized. Backstage, we are coming off the stage from National Wear. We're sprinting to that back room, rushing to change out of our clothes, and then trying to compose ourselves, then to elegantly walk in our evening gowns. So you have to really be in the right mindset to make that shift that quickly, because you're going from one category to the next, to the next. And like Rebecca said, there's so many things going on back there. Somebody's having to hold this roll up so you can tuck it in here. Pull your drawstrings back here. I have a photo on my Instagram where we have a couple of girls pulling on another girl's corset to try to tighten hers up. It's a team effort back there.
Do you have helpers? Do you get people? Oh, good. Okay.
Yes.
Oh, and a lot of times it's just the other queens. In my last pageant, I was 8 weeks out from shoulder surgery, so I wasn't able to lift my arm. But I had four people help me get into my dresses every time.
Oh, like that they took the time when they were also rushed to do that. Oh,
absolutely.
I love that. Wow. And Ellen, what about you? Did you have some moments?
Yes. So actually the week before I was in Nashville and my hair is, I'm not a natural blonde. I'm a brunette. And I made the rookie error of going swimming and turned my hair green.
No. Like right before?
Like literally like 5 days before. I was like, it was like, I mean, like 15-year-old Ellen would have loved it, like in her emo phase with like the dip dye, like it would have been great. But not before a pageant. I was like, my hair is green. And like, I was on my own. I didn't know anyone in Nashville. And I was like on the phone to my friends, like back in Ireland and back in the UK. And they're like, put ketchup in your hair. Like, oh
no. Is that a thing?
It's a thing.
What?
So I was there like running to like a 7-Eleven trying to like be like ketchup. It was totally mad. And then the actual thing that worked was oh my gosh, it's like a sachet like drink and you mix it in. It's like a flavor thing. I don't know what you guys call it and I can't remember it. But basically it was basically like a powder like lemon drink, and then I just dipped my hair and it dyed it.
It dyed it back blonde?
It dyed it back blonde. There I was, like, my hair, like, in, like, juice.
Oh, my God. Were you panicking?
I was, like, panicking, like, overload. And then, yeah, but then it was fine, thankfully, after that. And I think, actually, it might be the picture of me that Shanice is on about. You know, that's in Titanic where Rose's mom is doing the corset. I kind of felt like that. Yeah, so like it's, yeah, all, we all look very composed, and then backstage you're like, pull, like get her in the dress. Oh my God.
If you ever want like quick tips, you want to know a hack for something, ask a pageant.
Right? I mean, ketchup and lemon powder drink. I'm just, and now what about, was there a moment where you were like, wow, like the awe moment, the wonder moment? I'd love to hear that one too. Shanice, what was your moment of awe?
So there was a day that we were practicing our walking pattern, and it just wasn't clicking for me. I was really struggling internally to see in myself what everyone else is seeing. And I didn't understand why I was clicking. And Meg, she is absolutely amazing. She's a production assistant. And she snapped a picture of me. And she said, look at this. Like, do you see how incredible you look? And I looked at the picture and I told her yes out of my mouth. But in my head, I'm like, no, like, what are you seeing? So that night I went up to my room and I was like, okay, I need to get to the headspace where I'm seeing and I'm believing and I'm feeling. I need to get to this headspace. So I did my little self-care stuff. I did some meditating. I did a little journaling and I'm like, I gotta see it. So the next day was when my family showed up, and I don't live by my family. All my family lives in California and I live in Kentucky. And it's going to make me a little emotional thinking about it. We have all come from a very challenging background. And every single one of my family members was in that audience. And they, the way that they cheered me on, it didn't matter to me whether I went home with it or not. Like, they were so proud of me in that moment. And it helped me see it in myself. And that was like the moment I'm like, I can do this. Like, I just got to get right with me, but I can do this. And it was incredible. It was just, it was such a surreal moment. And then when I was crowned, like, do you know when something so incredible happens that you don't see, you don't hear, you can't, like everything, it just kind of goes blank because you're like, did this really just happen? My family went crazy. I didn't even hear them because I was just like, I can't believe that I just did this. Like, it was so surreal. It was an indescribable feeling.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Oh, thank you, Shanice. That description of being so witnessed and held by your family is so moving. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. You're making me cry as well. I love it. I love it. Ellen, what about you? The moments of awe.
So I've probably had a couple, actually, but probably the first one that I can really kind of say was like, that was a moment, was at the first internationals. So that was last year when I was Miss Voluptuous Ireland, and it was held in Nashville. And I won the advocacy award at internationals. And I, you know, I wasn't expecting any sort of award or anything, because I guess maybe I wasn't quite in the full mindset that year as well. And it was like my first time really, quite literally, obviously, putting myself on stage talking about sexual violence and my experiences.
And then when I won the advocacy award, not that I probably needed to win it, but it definitely helped in my healing for sure. And I had that moment on stage where I was like, I've done something. And in turn, because, you know, I was 23 and I was raped abroad and nearly died. And I kind of was probably searching for some sort of meaning. And then I was on stage and it kind of was like, I've done something. And I was like, heck no, I've done more than something. And it was like a really beautiful moment for me to reflect on all the things that I've done, not just with pageantry and talking about my experiences of sexual violence and advocacy and stuff like that, but, you know, still going abroad and traveling on my own, getting to meet wonderful women and hopefully, yeah, if people think this, being a kind person, but, and then standing on stage and feeling heckered as well. Like I was like, oh my gosh, like this dress looks so good on me. And I didn't connect to my body for a long time after my rape. So that was like a real awe moment for me. And then this year I got the role model at internationals as well. And I was just like, gosh, like I've come so far. Like, and definitely the pageant like really kind of helped channel all of that. But I was like, you know, like do people see me like that? And then it was, that's a really like great moment, because to when you, I mean, obviously everyone is deserving and all the women are role models and advocates and all that, but when you got other people telling you that, kind of like for myself, I was like, I kind of maybe needed to hear it. So it was, yeah, for me it was, those were my two awe moments.
Oh, I love that, Ellen. Oh my gosh. And when you said that, like you got to connect to your body again. Oh, just imagine. Thank you. That's so beautiful. And Rebecca, what about you? What are your moments?
I went into Miss Voluptuous as I was going in to have the funnest week of my life. And that's what I did. But the whole journey, my mantra was, I am worthy. And I was worthy to be there, to be on that stage. And I got called out for top six. And when I walked out on the stage, I had on this this green teal mermaid glitter dress that just fit me to a T. And I looked out and my family was there. And my son, he's a young man with autism, 16. And I really, the big pull into pageantry was for my daughter. I wanted her to see. And I never made that connection that my son needed to see. And he was cheering for me, just crying, yelling my name and mom. And I didn't see anything else but him. And I got to share that moment with him, and he got to see that different is okay and different is beautiful. And that was my moment.
Oh, Rebecca. Oh my gosh. I have never cried so much in a single episode. Oh my goodness. These moments are incredible. Like, it's incredible to me that in one experience, you all can have these moments of sisterhood and awe, and also like ridiculous and like strapping people into corsets and tipping their boobs. Like, I mean, I love that both can be, I mean, I think those are like the richest experiences, right? When we get to experience the full catastrophe of being human, the full range of emotions and experiences. Oh, thank you for sharing those moments with us. I'm so moved. I'm really curious about, like, if someone is feeling really inspired. I mean, I think everyone is going to be feeling inspired who's listening right now. But if they're like, maybe I could do that, if that little seed has been planted, what do people need to know? Like when you talk about travel and outfits, I'm curious around like money? I imagine you pay for all this. I don't know if you get sponsors. Like, I don't know anything about the kind of practical parts. Like, what if someone was interested in learning more, what are some of the things that you would say that they should think about? So, yeah. So Ellen, like, what's one tip you would have for someone?
I guess you have to look about it. Is it a kind of, what if you're going to do a pageant, do you want to go all in and go for something that has an international, or do you want something that's maybe more local to you? Because then obviously, you know, you have to then think about, like, if you're going to go and do that, like, where is it going to be held? Like, how are you going to get there? Like, all those kind of things. But also, like, I would say just, like, kind of, like, really connect with, like, local pageant girls, because there's so many resales and, like, you know, everyone thinks you have to have a brand new dress or whatever. Like, the dress that I competed at my first internationals had had, like, two previous owners. And, like, you know, so those sorts of things, you know, it's you be a bit money smart, but I would definitely think about, like, look at where it's going to be. And is it something that you can actually commit to the kind of time or to the distance of it?
Yeah, that's really helpful, Ellen. I love that idea. You're right. Because if, I mean, you're wearing it for probably a couple of hours, maybe a dress. So, right. If that. So, yeah. And so, Ellen, it does sound like it is your responsibility as a pageant participant to pay for all the costs yourself.
So some of the girls, so whenever I was competing the first year, the winner for the UK, they got funded to go. And I was an Irish delegate, so I chose to self-fund. You can, like, get sponsors yourself, you know, but then you have to be a little bit savvy. And I might let the other girls talk about how they kind of did it by reaching out to other companies and stuff. And I guess a degree of self-promotion, you know, but you can definitely cut the costs by doing those things. But I'll let the other girls, because I know they had some pretty good ways of getting themselves sorted.
Oh, perfect. Thanks, Ellen. Rebecca, how did you get yourself sorted?
Well, I had friends who helped me with things like, my friend is a photographer and she sponsored me by doing all of my photos. I do a little side work with a local vineyard and, they provided me with some giveaways, that sort of thing. And going back to costumes and clothing, I have never spent any more than $100.
Oh, wow. Really?
On anything. I use, there's several apps that are resell for prom and pageants and different marketplaces that I've found used. The key is to find out how tall the person is, look at their body shape and find out what size heels they're wearing in that dress. So, you know, I won my title with a dress that I paid $70 for. So there's no point of going out and spending thousands of dollars when, and it's just better for the environment as well. Just keep reusing, just wash and wear. And
I love that. Well, and to say also the challenge of finding plus size glam wear, you know, like it's hard in general. So the fact that there are these other avenues that you can tap into and have all those positive benefits makes so much sense.
There's several groups on Facebook that are plus size pageant wear oriented. That's all they are.
Mm-hmm. That's so good to know. I love it. People are so clever. Thanks, Rebecca. Shanice, what's a tip that you have for people?
So when you come into the system, you have to pay whatever the fee is to enter into it. And typically that will cover your entrance into it. It'll cover most of the competitions that you'll be a part of. There's some optionals that should be included. And then it'll also cover your room and board and your meals, because the pageant system provides your meals. So those are some things that you can take off and you don't have to worry about paying for individually, because it's included into that, all into that entrance fee. Now, well, that's exactly how MVP does it. And then after that, of course, like the girl said, you have to take into account, like, whether you want to do something local or international, because ultimately this is an investment into yourself. And you don't want to go and do something, especially that can really elevate you as a person. In my opinion, you don't want to do it half-ass. So you want to go in knowing, okay, well, I want to be able to put in this much into myself. So I'm going to compete into something that's more local, or I'm going to go all in. So let's try something that's international. You also have to account for those costs. And like Rebecca said, you don't have to have the most expensive things. I went through dress fiascos. My dress that I ended up receiving, I got 3 days before I left for competition. And it was from Amazon.
Nice. Wow.
So, and it was less than $100. You just be frugal where you can. What I did was all of the areas where I can go the cheapest route possible. That's what I did. I looked for resale items. There's something called Rent the Runway where you can even just rent it for a short amount of time and then send it back. And you can do all of those things. And then I would say the areas where you would look to spend a little more are those pieces where you're really investing. It might be like a coach. It might be, you know, you invest in a gym membership so that you can like have the space to practice if you choose to. You might invest in, you know, someone that helps you with your mindset, things like that. But as far as all the other stuff, you can be just as glitzy and glamour as any other girl and not spend thousands of dollars.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. What is one thing you wish you'd known before you started? One thing you wish you'd known before you dove in. Rebecca, we'll start with you this time.
Oh, that's a hard question. I wish I'd known that I could do it. I held off for a long time because I didn't think I could, much less be successful. So I wish I had known that there was a place and is a place for me as I am.
Oh, yes. Yes. Thanks, Rebecca. Shaunice, what do you wish you'd known?
I wish I had known and also focused more on the you versus you aspect. Because a lot of times you are, once you're entering into the system, you're befriending all of these incredible girls that you're going to be competing against. You don't know them. You haven't met them. You might meet them at a round table occasionally, but you're ultimately just seeing them on social media. So I wish I had known, like, you, it's you versus you. It doesn't matter what they have going on. They're great, but this is you. This is all about you and what you're doing and how you're growing as a person.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, not making it about anyone else, just really focusing on you. I like that, you versus you. Thanks, Shaunice. Ellen, what do you wish you'd known?
I think probably both girls have covered, probably had both of those things. You know, like, I guess probably I would kind of was a bit of a latecomer to pageants. I wish I could have done it before because it's kind of just enriched me from getting to know so many people and opened me to a bigger circle of friends and experiences. I very much work in a healthcare bubble. So yeah, I kind of wish that I had known that it, like, that pageant world existed a bit more. So
yeah, that's beautiful, Ellen. And it makes me think of another question around, I mean, it does sound like pageant world is a bit of a beautiful bubble to be part of. Is it hard to transition back to real life? Is it hard? Like, for those of you who aren't watching the YouTube video, all the faces changed. I love it.
We call it pageant hangover.
Oh, pageant hangover. Yeah. Say more, Shaunice. Like, what's intense about it?
Because you've gone from really preparing for this week for almost a year. Your whole focus outside of, you know, work and your family is to come to this week and show up the best possible version of you. So imagine preparing and preparing and preparing, and then it happens. And then whatever your results are, then you then have to process and deal with that. And then you're exhausted because the girls can vouch, especially that had hair and makeup. You're waking up some days at 4:30 in the morning for hair and makeup. And you're going all day long and you're having to be on all day long. And me, like, I don't mind being extroverted, but I'm naturally an introverted person. So I'm giving a lot of energy to be on and be on top of like my best game at all times. And then you're coming in sometimes and not able to decompress and go to bed until 10, 11, 12 at night, depending on what that day looked like. So it's a lot.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah, that makes so much sense. Yeah, Ellen, do you have a version of that? Like, what's it like for you to transition back?
It was a big bump for me. So I work in the emergency department, and I literally like was like, really? Like, literally 3 days ago, I was wearing heels and had my hair perfect, and now like someone's just vomited on me. Is this my life? I mean, like, those sorts of things do happen, like, probably, like, in the build-up to it. But, yeah, it's just such, it just feels so much more of a whack back down to earth. And then I guess there's that kind of, like, you've had, like, such an ego and a confidence boost. Sometimes it's a bit kind of like, oh, you're just walking down the street and it's like, hello?
Hello, I am.
Here. I am not like that, I promise. Yeah, you're so used to like walking around and being like, hi. And then it's like, oh, okay.
I love that. Oh, that's great. Oh, thank you. Rebecca, what about you? What's that transition like for you?
Well, usually there's a little bit of a travel involved post-pageant. So my family knows, don't talk to mom. I'm naturally extroverted, but pageant week or weekend, it's a lot. So sometimes I just need a couple hours of silence. And then jumping back into work, I have about 1,000 volunteers within our organization. So there's always somebody to talk to and somebody to transition back. But it takes me a good couple of weeks to catch up on my sleep and the start having some normal breathing, slowing down and just switching my brain back to normal life, which my normal life is pretty interesting too. So. Yeah.
We were in Colorado for this past week, all of us, and the elevation, oh boy.
Yes, Ellen got sick.
Yes, I got sick after coming back home. It's a very humbling experience once you come back, because it doesn't matter whether you want or you're not, you got to kind of convert back into normal life. And it's like, yeah, you won, but like, you're still this normal person. It's a very big switch.
I love Rebecca's idea of like keeping the crown in the purse and be like, hang on, know who you're talking to here.
Actually, at my work lanyard, I have a little crown pen. So it's...
A little reminder. And if you do pageants, like, are they every year? Is Miss Voluptuous every year? So really, in theory, you could like come back from one and then a very short time later start prepping for the next one.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. So interesting. I want to bring us to joy. So the last question I always ask of my guests is, what connects you to joy? And even like, what does joy even mean to you? Do you think it's something that we choose? Do we create it? Is it just kind of like given to us? I'm really fascinated by this idea of how we relate to the concept of joy. So do another little go around and just check in on, I don't know, what does joy mean to you? How do you find it? How does it show up for you?
I definitely think, like, for me, joy comes from other people. So I guess sometimes it's just kind of like people's kind of aura personas. They're just like joyous, and then they instantly like elevate you. And then there's, guess, like, kind of like for me, like, I would say I'm a people person. Like, I love seeing other people happy. I love having those small moments in life where you're just with your friends or your family, and you could just be doing nothing, but it's so, like, you know, you're laughing, and those to me are like, are joy. So I always find that I get it from other people, be that they kind of gift it to you or create that environment. And I think it sometimes, like, I guess you kind of what we're saying, you know, you can like look in the world and be like, be a bit depressed. So I think you have to actively kind of just remind yourself that it is there. So you probably, I think we probably, like everybody, we have waves of emotions each through the day. And, but I think it's good to like reflect and be like, oh, that was like a nice little moment of joy that I had that day. Doesn't necessarily have to be like, oh my gosh, this whole day was incredible. It can just be like a little thing where you're like, I haven't seen that person in like so long, and it was so nice to see them. And that makes you, made you feel really good and really happy. So I think it's about kind of like, for me, it's from other people, but also, you know, looking for it, or maybe, or recognizing that it is there in day-to-day life.
Yeah, I love that. I love that idea of gifting joy. I actually think that's really beautiful. Thanks, Ellen. Rebecca, what about you? What does joy mean to you?
I think I'm always looking for joy. With our family, us being a special needs family, I find joy in progress and whatever that looks like. I ask my children every day, what was the best thing that happened to you? And I'll ask myself the same question. And so we try to find that little bit of joy. Even on the worst day, there's something there to be joyful and to celebrate.
Absolutely. Yeah, love that, Rebecca. Thank you. And Shanice, how about you?
Joy to me was something, it was a foreign concept, I'm going to be honest. It was something that I did not really find myself having much of until my later 20s and early 30s. And I realize now that joy for me, it's peace. It's being content. There was so much that I struggled with, so many things that I was working towards. Nothing was all ever good enough. And I always had to keep going for the next thing. I wasn't good enough. Where I was working wasn't good enough. My home, like there were just so many things. And now just having the peace to like know how to put myself first, how to be comfortable in my own body, how to create a deeper connection with my daughter, how to really truly connect with my husband, how to fill my life with the things that I like, the things that make me happy and not what someone else thinks that should look like for me. That is joy to me, that ultimate peace. And it's in those little small moments, like when I'm washing my dishes and I'm like, wow, I had a really great day doing this or that, or this went really well for me the other day, or I'm so grateful my husband did blah, blah, blah. Like it's in those little moments where I really get the most joy.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, love that.
You are all so wise and so incredible. And I'm so honored to have had this conversation with you. So thank you so much for being here and answering questions and sharing your incredible experiences and your platforms with us. Yeah, I'm so, so grateful. And I feel a deep sense of joy from this conversation. So thank you all.
Before we go, I'd like to read a poem, because poetry can reach our hearts in a different way. Poems can have us feel in a different way. And that's what this podcast is all about. Expanding our hearts, deepening our empathy, and inviting in joy. So each week, you get a new poem.
For this episode with Shanice, Ellen, and Rebecca, I'm reading a poem called Reverie by Fenton Johnson. These three delightful humans encompass many of each of our lived experiences, right? The variety, the struggles, the joys. We are the all. And this poem gets at that feeling really powerfully. So that's why I chose it. Here it is, Reverie. I was the starlight. I was the moonlight. I was the sunset before the dawning of my life. I was the river forever winding to purple dreaming. I was the glowing of youthful springtime. I was the singing of golden songbirds. I was love. I was the sunlight. I was the twilight.
I was the humming of winged creatures ere my birth. I was the blushing of lily maiden. I was the vision of youthful striving. I was the summer. I was the autumn. I was the all time. I was love.
Thank you for joining me today. My hope is that you're feeling a little less alone and a little more seen. So until the next episode, you can find me on Instagram at fatjoy.life, on YouTube at youtube.com/@fatjoy, and on Substack at fatjoy.substack.com. And please do check out the episode notes for how you can connect with my amazing guest and for the links to the poem. All right, lovely, I am sending you off with my best wishes for an abundantly fat joy day, and we'll talk again soon.